How many of you remember the movie Apollo 13? A number of you do. There was a critical message that was broadcast from the space capsule back to NASA. Does anyone remember what that was?
Houston, we have a problem.
Houston, we have a problem. Okay. That is a message some of us have been trying to broadcast in the OCA for the last 15 or 20 years. OCA, we have a problem. Okay. If the OCA, unfortunately, we're not like NASA and we're able to get those people back off and resolve the problem that quickly. And I think sometimes people haven't been listening to what the problem is. We have a dire, dire situation in the OCA in terms of its membership. And you should have on your paper, on your tables, some statistics. These are your statistics as the diocese of New York, New Jersey. And you will notice in terms of one page, it says number of members by deanery. The New Jersey deanery is that largest pink bar at the bottom. You are the largest of the deaneries. Historically, you have had about twice as many members as the other two deaneries of the diocese combined. But notice what is happening from 1990 to 2000 to 2010, and even today, there is a steady decline across the board. Okay. This is in spite of the fact, if you look in your diocese, that you've added several new churches in that period. Okay. If you look on the other side, you see the acre decline in the last, since 2006 to 2013, of a precipitous decline, again, within the same range of about a quarter of membership has been lost in the last 8 years. And remember, this is reported membership. And we realize that reported membership is not indicative necessarily of the total number of adherents. It doesn't include children. But I think anyone would say that if this were your financial accounts and you had been losing this much money over a period of time, you would probably fire your financial advisor before now, right? You wouldn't have allowed it to go on for some 23 years and say, oh, gee, we can just stand that kind of precipitous loss. Part of what we're going to do today is look at why loss takes place and then some of the things to do about it. The workbooks are designed for you to write in, and so it's going to be very important that you do that because there are a lot of graphs and things we're going to be looking at. I don't want to be too technical, but I do want it to be graphic in the sense that you're able to get a picture and also have some tools to utilize as you go back to your parishes and do the work. I want to disabuse you of any notion that by coming today, you've been to a workshop, you'll get continuing ed credit for it, I think, as clergy, and then, fine, your problems are going to be solved. No. Your problems aren't going to be solved by going to this workshop. Your problems won't be solved in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, necessarily, because your problems have been developing over a period of time, at least a quarter century, if not more, and they're not going to be addressed and redressed in a quick amount of time either. You have to be in this for the long haul. And I do want to say we're going to be looking at, first of all, life cycles of churches, and then what the implication of the life cycle of a church, and you see that on page 1-1, is something that is true of any church. Okay? You cannot give a time limit on what the life span is, but you can certainly start to relate to some of these concepts immediately. That in every church community, there is a sort of a prenatal beginning, a birth of a church. Sometimes if you look at the cornerstone in your own parish, you'll realize that that was really the time when you built the church, that a lot of work had gone on before that church was ever built, that church was ever envisioned. As Father David said, there used to be a church sitting here, you know, which predates the church over there. And yet, before the church was ever built, there was a vision, in a community here in South River and in all of your towns where you come from that says we're going to establish a church here, we're going to pull together people, and we're going to build a church. And it was a very future-oriented nation. The sad fact is, in most parish churches, the future is no longer even a value or a motivating force. We have to address those factors. We have to address those factors today. If you look at, in terms of stage one, the birth of a church, we're going to be using a term like pre-start. Because some of you are going to be involved in having to restart your churches. I'm going to tell you that right off. You say, well, maybe we've been around 75 years, 100 years. You have to understand something, that sometimes the solution is going to be restarted. That doesn't mean closing it down, moving away, and then coming back and rediscovering it. But it does mean that you're going to have to be thinking like you were in those initial stages of church development, that when the church was originally established in your locale and before that. There's also a stage that comes in at stage three. Stage two is a period of growth, and in any one of your churches, you can relate to that. There was a period from the time it was begun till a period of growth. Many of our churches were aided not by evangelistic outreach, but by two things, by demographic shift and biology. Okay? There were waves of immigrants coming to this country to fill our churches, and people were having families and larger families, and those were the primary means by which our churches grew. Somewhere along the line, your church plateaued. In other words, it wasn't growing by leaps and bounds any longer. It could be the fact that when you filled the new building, and it was filled to the rafters. And it depends on when you built your building and when you filled the building, but maybe sometime in the 50s that was the case. And everything looked really nice. And a lot of our OCA churches built new churches about in the 50s, by the way. There was a wave of church building across America. People came back from the war. We had a housing crunch for returning GIs and their families. And also there was a wave of new church building that went on. But what happened? What happened in those churches if they stopped looking towards the future? What happened in those churches if they said, we've made it now? We built the new church. Were full. It almost became like, remember the parable of the man and his barn. And the man in his barn says, my goodness, I have enough. I can just wait till what? I die. Churches maybe didn't vote that way. They didn't say, well, we're going to just hold on until we die, and we're going to start coasting down. But so help me, if you reach a plateau, in other words, you're not growing further, and you're not doing something with the growth you have, that plateau mentality sets in. It could be for a small period of time. It could be for a long period of time. And what's happening is, in that period of time, you're already starting to decline and you don't recognize it. Because you're no longer looking towards the future. And once you have no more future vision, decline has already set in. Has already set in. Sort of like going up on the roller coaster. You get up to the peak. I hate roller coasters, but I'll tell you, the one thing I like is if up at the top I could stay there once we had that slow, click thing, because I at least want to see where I am. Okay? But what happens? They don't let you stay up at the top of the roller coaster very long, do they? All of a sudden, then there is that plummeting decline. You lose your stomach, you know. Figuratively or otherwise, going down to the bottom. And unfortunately, in church life, it can feel like that, hurtling towards demise. And that the faster, closer you get to that end, there can be all the negatives that are associated with that, even on a roller coaster ride. You know, it's going to quit, but it's going to not quit soon enough to suit some people. We're going to be looking at the concept of redeveloping your churches and when that needs to begin. Because ideally, you don't begin till the church is in decline to redevelop it. Many of our churches have gotten in decline, and we're going to have to redevelop churches from the point of decline. Actually, and we'll look at this in a minute, you start redeveloping your church before it ever reaches a plateau. Because remember, once you reach a plateau, We're not looking at the future any longer. And finally, some churches will die in the last 5 years in our diocese in Western PA. Remember, the Western PA diocese at the time of the autocephaly in 1970 was the second largest of the dioceses in terms of reported membership. And now we have only 25% of what we reported in 43 years. Only 25% of people remain. And we have started closing churches. We have started closing churches. And remember, in America, the average church lifespan is 110 years. Across the board, the average church lifespan is 110 years. And why this has particularly dire consequences for OCA churches, just look at the cornerstones on most of our churches. How many of our OCA churches have celebrated their 100th anniversary, or their 105th, or they're about to celebrate their 95th, or their 90th? Now, this is not to be a fatalist and say, well, after 110 years, we just expire. But on average, a church will last about 110 years. And why? And see, we're not prepared for this type of thinking, because our type of thinking was molded in a different society. It was molded in an Orthodox context, where people lived in villages where not only their great-grandparents lived, but their great-great-parents, grandparents before those great-grandparents that lived there. And maybe they all went to the same church. And maybe that church still stands. But American society is far more mobile, it's far different. And we have to understand that the same things that motivated and built up a generation of churches a century ago, which we were able to do and do well, are those same things we have to tap into to make sure our churches last into the next century. And so it's going back to that period of vision to restart our churches. Look at page 1-2. There's some very distinctive characteristics about the pre-start, the incline, the recline, the decline, and the restart in church life. In the incline period, it is something that you start at as you start and you move to stable. You know, when you're beginning, how many of you started the church, by the way? Either as laity or clergy. Don't be ashamed, just raise your hand if you've started a church. You know, thank you, there's like three of you in here. You know, there was something that stability was one of the things you aimed for. Because when you start up a new church, there are a lot of things, there are a lot of variables, and stability is a virtue, and you are wanting to stabilize everything. But you see, what happens in the recline period, in other words, you get up on the plateau and you start taking it a little bit easier. You go from stable to stagnant. You know, you rest a little bit too long. It's like you're traveling up in the mountains and you reach the tabletop and you want to rest there. And sometimes people don't want to move on. If you were to ask you the question, what do you think probably is the single most contributing factor to the plateau in your parishes? I bet you could go home and verify this by your census records. What do you think it would be? What would you think the single most contributing factor to the plateau in your parish life, no matter what parish you would come from, would be? Any thoughts? Speak up. Complacency would be an attitude. Yeah, I would think of an action you all took to start the decline or the plateau.
I was going to say indifference.
Indifference is going to be an attitude. It's going to be an attitude. There's a concrete action you probably took and celebrated, by the way, that started your plateau or your decline.
Paying off the mortgage.
Paying off the mortgage. Absolutely. Statistically, when you pay off the mortgage, you're planning, and you don't have any other future plans for that money, or for ministry, or vision. It's the same thing that happens when you pay off the mortgage on your home. You work all your life to pay off the mortgage on your home to do what?
Retire.
Of course, that makes sense. But you know, when that church was consecrated, that altar was consecrated to do what? To remain until when? The second coming. So if you consecrated an altar and said, we're praying that this remain until the second coming, we're going to retire and just kind of take it easy until the second coming happens, what will tend to happen is there will be a decline in that parish life. As Father Gary mentioned, I did have a period of formation in the Episcopal Church and went to Episcopal Seminary, and I said one of the few things I thought that they taught me that was worth anything was they said, you celebrate your mortgage burning with a new mortgage. So never let your church get out of debt. Because you see, and even in their own way, they were saying you have to have a vision towards the future. But then you go back and you look at whenever you paid off the mortgage on your church, you see so much stability turns into stagnation and then the indifference, the complacency that goes with it. So that's one of the things I want you to look at. Because obviously, when you get in the decline period, you go from stagnation into a sick period. Literally, there can be evidence of lack of church health amongst the membership, amongst the body corporate as a whole. I want us to look at some of these characteristics and see if they don't start ringing true. There are three columns there. And these are distinctive characteristics of churches in incline, recline, and decline. We've just mentioned attitudes. Yeah, in an incline period, the attitude is one of intensity. There's an attitude of intensity. We've got to go out. We've got to do this. We've got to find the location. We've got to build this. We've got to find land. We've got to get members. We've got. But in recline, people become satisfied. Again, I've heard of churches so satisfied that when they pay off the mortgage, the parish treasurers will make announcements, you don't have to give as much money anymore to the parish because we paid off the debt. That's just a deacon at work. But I'm serious. I don't make this. The anecdotes I'm going to share with you today are all true. I couldn't make up stuff this good. But understand that really happens. And why do you think that happens as a motivator? I know one parish that cut its budget by 25% when it paid off its debt. Don't you think it took it a while to build back up? Because they're saying, we don't need the commitment anymore. You know, we don't need that commitment. But in decline, it goes from satisfied to complacent. And there's just a complacency. No matter as membership starts dwindling, facilities sometimes are in disrepair, and the closer and closer to the end, it's just a cumulative effect. Looking at another way, aspect of time, in the incline period is toward the future, but in the recline period is toward the present. And in the decline period, guess where the orientation of time, how people start looking at time? They look at the past. They look at the past, and sometimes it's a romanticized past. Remember when the church was filled. Okay? Remember when we were able to do this. Remember when we did those things. There is an attitude of moving towards the past, but you know, the kingdom of God is not in the past, and the hope of our churches is not in the past. We build on the past, but we have to be very honest. And what made the past so successful? Are we really willing to do that? And you've probably seen that too. The sacrifices of the first generation, second generation, sometimes by the fourth generation, it's like inherited wealth. Mom and daddy struggle, work hard, scrape, save, accumulate. They leave it to their children, who maybe the first generation after mom and daddy will kind of hoard it and hang on to it. But what happens to the third or the fourth generation with inherited wealth? It tends to be spent. People who didn't have to work, who didn't have to scrape, who didn't have to save, but they blow it because they don't have the investment. It's not the value to them. And many times, you'll understand that the percentage of giving per capita in the 30s was higher than in some of our parishes it is today. And remember, we're talking about an immigrant population during the Great Depression. And we have church records that prove that. In some parishes where the average gift was $2 a week per family. $2 a week per family in the 30s. And sometimes your grandchildren are still giving $2 a week now. You know? So there was sacrifice, there was motivation, there was dedication, and there was a future orientation, because grandmother and grandfather, great-grandmother and great-grandfather were not doing this just for themselves. They were doing it for their great-grandchildren. There might be a church there. There was a future orientation that they had. If you look at the risk tolerance in the incline period is high risk. You're going to take a lot of risky actions. But when you get into the recline, it's low risk, and by the time you get into decline, it's no risk. Put another way, there's a do or die attitude in incline. We've got to do this. We must do this. There's an imperative. When you get into that recline, that satisfied period, it's more of live and let live. Finally, in decline, you're faced with issues of don't or die. The closer you get to the end, it's more of don't or die. As you look at money, in the incline period, money is an investment in the future. In the recline period, it's a sustainer to keep you doing what you're doing. You see, when you start declining, it becomes a preserver. And endowments are used to run just the ordinary cost of minister. And the endowment can be a great cripple. One of the things you find in new churches that are starting out, they don't have a lot of money. Many times declining churches have tremendous bank accounts. Because they're not using the money with a future orientation. They're saying, we've got to hold on to this and make sure. And again, we project our own circumstances. When we get to retirement age, we want to make sure we have enough money so we don't outlive our funds. Right? That's what all financial managers teach us. And that's prudent. But you see, when it comes to the church, sometimes we almost turn it into a self-fulfilling prophecy. Hoping that, you see, there's enough funds to be there and the church is open for our funerals. And after that, we really haven't thought much more about it. Leadership style. The leadership style of incline period is more of an entrepreneurial. Let's get things started. We multitask. We have people who do all sorts of things. They have to do it well, and they have to do it on the spur of the moment. But in the recline period, we have a nice functioning organization, and it's more of a managerial style. In decline, that's what it is. It's more of a custodial style. We've got the building. We want to keep it in good repair. Of course, unless you're getting right up into decline, and then you can see when you drive by the church that's really bad off, it already looks in decline before you get out of the car, right? The attitude towards just institutional cohesion is in incline, you're in a building mode. In recline, you're in a maintenance mode. In decline, you're in a survival mode. What are we going to do to survive? You look at another way in terms of what you do and why, motivation, and how you do it. In incline, you're in mission. In recline, you're in programs. In decline, you're in structure. You've erected a structure over the years, which at one time was a means to implement programs, which at one time, those programs were the way you developed your mission, but now you keep structures alive just because you've had these structures and you want to keep them alive. And we'll talk more about that because I'm going to challenge you before the day's over to get rid of most of the structures you've got and you've held on to. If they don't serve a legitimate purpose anymore in your church. You see, in institutional decline, if you look at a business or anything, you find that you have management and bureaucracy that see the purpose of the business mainly to keep them employed. They're no longer producing product. The point of that industry or whatever is to keep management employed. Keep structures. Churches can be that way too. And I'm not saying the solution is to go fire your priest. No. That's not the solution. It's to understand something. But sometimes we have such cumbersome systems that we've erected in our churches that were maybe all right 50 or 60 years ago, but no longer serve a purpose. And therefore, we're going through the motions of keeping structures alive, and we think that, my goodness, the purpose of our church is maybe simply to keep those structures alive. In business, to keep bureaucracies. In business. If you wanted to take another look at it, the attitude, and especially of the clergy leadership in an incline phase, is of a test pilot. He's got a prototype. He's taking it out on a flight. You know, he's hoping it stays up. He's done all his homework, he hopes, but he's going to have a lot of on-the-job training. But in recline, the parish life is kind of run on autopilot. Everything is kind of functioning. Everybody's happy. For a while, remember, you haven't started down. You're up there at the top. And then finally in decline, sometimes all you've got is the pilot light. You know, it's burning, but, you know, that's the only light left. Another way to look at leadership in this phase. In incline, you've got new leadership. And in recline, you've got established leadership. And in decline, you've got incumbent leadership. Incumbent leadership. And incumbent leadership will not take you out of decline at all. Now remember, leadership is going to be an attitude. Leadership is going to be an attitude. But if people say, well, I'm with this or I'm with that, and that can be not only clergy leadership, but lay leadership as well. So we have to look at that, and how much of that is what really ossifies, keeps us structurally from moving forward. Because we are now, instead of a church that is in service, a church is basically in bondage and seeks itself simply to prop up its own systems, rather than to be a ministry in the community. Look at page 13. This is where these two things merge. If you look at the top, there's the life cycle of the church. Now, this could be a 30-year-old church, by the way. It could be a 130-year-old church. The life cycle is going to be the same. It might take longer. There are people in mission churches who, after 30 years, face closure. They face closure. Simply because at the work along the line, they plateaued at whatever stage of growth they were, and they didn't move on. If you look at the down at the bottom, the attitudinal things that start, and what you notice is the attitudinal things, if you superimpose the bottom graph over the top, you would notice that the recline attitude already starts in the growth phase. And there's that strange little line that looks like it's pointing sort of to 11 o'clock if you're on the face of the clock in the growth curve. I want you to circle that little slash. Is that up here? One more click. It's up in here, as you notice in the book. That's the place redevelopment has to start. Churches that are growing need to be redeveloping and recasting vision before they ever reach plateau. Otherwise, they'll reach plateau and like it so much they'll tend not to leave it. And then once they leave it, however, it will not be for a further upward trajectory. It'll be into some stage of decline, which maybe is imperceptible at the beginning, but later will be headlong, head over heels, down the slope. But I want you to look at something else, and this is going to be a little tensive for pastors. 1-4. Just like in a lifestyle of a church, there is birth, growth, plateau, decline, and death. And there are conditions that describe those: pre-start, incline, recline, decline, and restart. So too that is applicable to the lifestyle of a pastor. Pastor goes through those phases one way or the other. And it's incumbent upon pastors to find out where they fit in where they are. It's not based on how long you've been in ministry. Okay? It's based on where you are in terms of your attitude, your motivation, your strength, your vision for the future. I am very forthright that if you're a pastor who has presided over the decline period in the life of your church, you will not be the pastor who leads it out of decline. That simply won't happen. That simply will not happen. And I know this is where the bishop said, I was going to pull off the mask. Well, I don't know if he knew what mask I was going to talk about first. But this is one we have to take very, very seriously. That does not mean that the solution to all the problems is someone who's straight out of seminary. Okay? Because the solution to the most problems straight out of seminary is people straight out of seminary don't have the skills or the life experience to do this type of work either. Okay? Because it's going to take a combination of those skills. Sometimes that happens. But what I'm challenging clergy to understand is if you are the pastor of a church that has, you know, gone into precipitous decline, and I'm not blaming that decline on you, but understand, you will not be the pastor to lead that community out of decline. Okay? This one. But likewise, parish leadership. If you have been in parish leadership during precipitous decline, you're probably not the parish leadership who's going to take the church and lead it out of decline into a healthy future. That's where I'm saying we've got to be real serious about how we're looking at this and bringing leadership to bear, because it's all going to rise or fall on the leadership of the parish. Again, it is not based on your age. It is based on your attitude. And it is based on your strength. Now, that has some function in age, but I've seen 30-year-olds who claim to be burned out. And 70 or 80-year-olds who are just on fire. So understand this. You can't just put it chronologically. But there has to be a willing synergy between lay leadership and clergy leadership to be able to lead the parish out. And so this is one of the things we're going to be looking at as well, that is a factor. Because you have to get to the point. Remember what Einstein's definition of insanity was, don't you? Doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for different results. If that's where you find your parish life, that you're doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results and probably getting less results than you did in the past, you need a paradigm shift from what you're doing. You need a paradigm shift. So this workshop today is to help you begin nudging you down the road to that paradigm shift. Look at page 15. There is definitely a connection between the life cycle of a church and the life cycle of a pastoral ministry. In other words, if a pastor enters into the recline phase of his ministry, in the recline phase of a parish life, it's probably a combination that doesn't have the optimum future. Okay? Let's see, some pastors can be in retirement and go out and turn churches around. Because those pastors never got into recline. They were always looking to the future and what else they could do and get started. That's why sometimes you see people who are retirees start new missions. They may be retired from one thing, but they have an attitude that's still future-oriented. And it's going to be that attitude that is the most critical thing. But there are some factors that where you see that the connection between the lifestyle of the church and the lifestyle of the pastoral ministry, we call the X factor for want of any other cute term. It's the only person it is, but it's the critical factor. And some of these are elements in turning churches around. One is energy. How much energy does the pastor have? Okay. The next one is health.
How healthy is it?
Not just physically, but emotionally. The next one is support. What kind of support does he have in the parish? Is he expected to go in and turn the parish all around by himself? Or is there a support network within the parish that says, Father, you lead us, we're going to follow you, and we're going to get out of this rut we found ourselves in? There's also other types of support networks. So does he have other priests who can be mentors, who can provide advice? And sometimes this is real hard for priests because most of us think we know it all anyway. So it's very hard for us to ask for help sometimes. Because you see, sometimes priests like to be kind of secretly, well, my parish is a little bit better than Father So-and-so's parish. And if I said I needed some help, and I asked Father So-and-so for help, then it might mean that, there's all sorts of little pettiness and jealousy that sometimes clergy get into. But saying, you know, we're not all things to all people. I mean, Paul was. But most of us aren't. And most of us do not have the ability to do all things that we need or have the knowledge or the training. Which leads us to the fourth point. Training to do this work. Seminaries didn't train you to do this work. Seminaries didn't train you to do mission work either. I know you would agree, but I just wanted you to realize that that's where our seminaries have to go. They have to go in terms of mission training and then redevelopment training. That's got to be part of the curriculum. Because you see, what we've done is we've developed a mentality of Christendom from overseas of basically a state church where everybody's at least nominally Orthodox or nominally something. And then we have all the structures, and we send people from the seminaries that focus on those structures. And in America, we have to have a missional mindset. We're not a land where everybody is presumed to be Orthodox. You know? And we can't train our clergy just to go out and fit into existing parishes and everything will be well, because unless there's plague or invasion, the birth rate will keep those churches full. That was a historic European model. It doesn't really work in Europe. But you see, that's one of the things that in terms of our preparation for clergy are at a disadvantage. They have to learn this. They have to get training beyond what they've been trained in. And as parishes, are you willing to have your clergy and key leadership training? Is there the drive? Is there just the drive? Or like, oh, well, you know, that's good. You know, evangelism, outreach mission, that's good. Now let's see what we're doing for the chicken barbecue. We have a drive to look and say, no, this is imperative. Coupled with that is experience. You don't put the young guys straight out of seminary into the roughest parish and say, well, they need youth, and so he'll bring it. You don't do that to a young priest. Especially if you want to keep him in the priesthood. Okay? Does the clergy leadership, do they have high capacity? Just, there are some people who are high capacity people. They can do a number of things well, and you have to be able to do a number of things well if you're going to be more than just filling in a spot, you know, on a clergy roster or something. There are other life cycle dynamics that we need to look at, and see those on page 16. And you have to take this into consideration. What is the life cycle of the community that you minister in and to, and more specifically, your parish community? Where do you find the majority of your parishioners right now in their own life cycle? You know, are they at that plateau? Are they reclining? Are they nearing the earthly end? Obviously, the more of these factors that start to correlate with each other, the more difficult it's going to be. Not impossible. It's not impossible. But what is the life cycle of the community? As I said, there are a lot of people who are retirees who go out and start new missions. But if you have the majority of your people are, say, over 70, it's a very different dynamic than if the majority of your people are under 40. Big difference. How about the life cycle of the city in which you live? You see, these life cycles apply to cities too. You know, does the city, does it see its best years in the past or in the future? And finally, this is what we're going to have to kind of hold on and cringe a little bit, the life cycle of the denomination, in other words, our church entity that we find ourselves in. More particularly, put OCA, because that's what we find ourselves in. Now, if you look at these statistics, you can see that beginning in 2006, the precipitous decline of the last 8 years, 7 years. Is there a reason you think that 2006 till now, there's been a drop of 25% in your diocesan census? Can you think back to what was happening in 2006? We're in some really critical areas institutionally as the OCA, and this also makes it more difficult. Now you're here because you say, hey, there has to be a way out. That's why you're here. But you have to take into consideration, it is harder to bring a church out of decline if it's in a declining community, a declining city, and a declining denomination. Okay? Now your community's there. It just doesn't mean that the churches in newer communities and younger churches are going to be the ones growing by leaps and bounds. That doesn't translate. Maybe just as stagnant, just as plateaued. Okay? But it does mean we have some baggage that brings because of the last decade, let us say, in the OCA, that really impact our growth and our future. And it's how we respond to those things. How we respond to those things. Okay? Any questions at this point? We're getting ready to jump to the next section. By the way, I don't give breaks. You're going to have some work sections in which you may take a break during the work section. But I know how Orthodox are when they let out a break. You know, it tends to take a while to unbreak. So we have to keep moving on to get the work done. Any questions about life cycles, first of all, and how they impact the ministry? And this is being taped and videoed. So, Father David will hand you the mic. So, and there's a hand up over there. And try to keep the question on life cycle, if you could. And then this way we'll be able to get a report.
You mentioned that. Priests said if they have been in or experienced the decline, they're not likely or cannot be the ones to bring it back up. Why is that? And same thing with the parish council related as well.
It's the normal reason is that you tend to look at tenure at that point, and sometimes clergy have been in a position for, and we tend to have a long tenure in amongst our clergy. And it means that whatever skills they had to bring to bear, they didn't have the skills to address the decline in its early years. And they probably, and it could be energy, and it could be health, depending on where, you know, when you start looking at all of these factors, where it is. But it tends to be, I know in our diocese, it was one of our elder priests, and our archbishop was saying, well, Father so-and-so is pushing back on this concept. And I said, well, why do you expect him not to? You know,
he's like he's 90 years old, you know.
And it's no put down to him. But, you know, at 90 years of age, you know, most of us are going to push back on something. And so if you're on the leadership, if you're in leadership, you've got to realize those kinds of limitations. And many times in some of our communities, the decline was initiated by external circumstances. Certainly in Western PA, when mines started closing, steel mills started closing in 75, and that period in the 70s, and there was a population drain. those are external things, but it also means that the pastors who presided over that thing, they themselves have kind of declined in the process. And that's an objective thing. I'm not speaking personally anymore, but it's an objective thing. And the ministry style probably is one that was more appropriate before the decline began than after it. So it's a question also of just of a skill set for being able to address that. Absolutely. Other questions? Okay. Got one over there.
Would you say that the defined portion of the life cycle is something that's unavoidable or even natural? And if that's the case, then is the problem not so much the decline portion of the life cycle, but an organization's response to it, or the acceptance of it, or its way out of it, or its, you know, writing it down to the bottom?
Right. Is the decline portion inevitable? It's inevitable if you don't do anything about it. Okay? It's not inevitable. That's one of the things you have to carry away from this. If you begin redevelopment at the proper phase of incline, then it's not inevitable. Because again, people say, oh, well, we decline, everything declines, we all die. Yeah, but remember, we're talking about churches. And so it's that can almost be a fatalistic trap to fall into, to say, no, this is not inevitable. But it means that left to our own devices, it will happen. Okay? So it puts the onus on our shoulders. The burden is really on us to address it and know when to address it and to keep addressing it. And again, this is sometimes where you know, pastors lead it to their own level of saturation of their own skill sets. And they're happy. And sometimes pastors don't want to move out of the way and let someone else come in because they're afraid someone else will come in and mess it all up. And someone else might come in and mess it all up. So it's one of those things that you have to be looking at. But I think we have to become more sophisticated in how we address this in that regard. No, but it's not that it's inevitable. It's not that, you know, human death is inevitable. But again, how we die, we do have a few things. I mean, are we going to take care of ourselves? Are we going to, you know, make better choices for ourselves? When we can make better choices, even humans have some of that choice. Institutionally, we have a lot more choices we can make. But we have to be dedicated and have a culture that is dedicated to this. And I think one of the reasons it is so critical is we have such a critical mass in the OCA that's about the same age in terms of parish life. That, you know, about two-thirds to three-quarters of our churches are in this 100-year window right now. Because so many of our churches were built before and communities established before World War I. And I think it makes it far more critical for OCA churches because our churches tend to be the oldest of the Orthodox churches in this country. And it's something that other jurisdictions haven't had to face as much for several different reasons, and not necessarily evangelistic outreach, but they're younger in their life cycle, and they're also still many times replenished by more waves of immigration. And our churches weren't after a period of time.